College baseball fans, it's time for the D1 Baseball Podcast with Mike Rooney, Aaron Fitt, and Kendall Rogers. Let's win every podcast. Now, here's the pride of the Newtown Edgemont Little League, Coach Rooney.
Hello and welcome to the 48 Minutes of Heaven we call the D1Baseball.com podcast. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney. And gentlemen, we're quad boxing today. There's nothing better in this great country of America than when we can do a baseball quad box. Upper right box, the great Aaron J. Fitt. Upper left, the czar of Eastern Texas, Kendall Rogers. And most importantly, look at the flex. Bottom left, but not bottom in any way, shape,
show
or
those
form,
teeth, baby.
The director of credibility at D1Baseball.com, David J. Seifert. Seif, how are you?
The J is incorrect, but thank you for everything else. I think the
J is silent. It's pronounced yogging, I believe.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Yes. I thought his middle name was Z. I thought he was Zebediah-esque or something like that.
Seif, do you have a good middle name? What do you got?
Oh, it's my father's name, Wayne. So very simple.
Oh, okay. Strong.
David, that's a
very classic American name.
Carried on the tradition of my son. So my son's middle name is David. So we'll keep handing it down.
Oh, I like that. That's a good play. Very good. Good to see you, Seif.
You too.
Yeah. Fitzy, KR, how are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're hot. It's very hot down in the Lone Star State, we're good otherwise.
Yeah. Fitzy, any more hole-in-ones to report?
Runes, I'm living the dream. I've not made a hole-in-one in several months. I think I'm due.
Dry spell.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of hole-in-ones, Fitzy, and your future hole-in-ones, the future of sports has arrived because of our good friends at S2 Cognition. See what I did there, boys? See, come on now.
Boom. That's about a 40-45 transition, but go ahead.
we're not worthy, Runes.
45 transition. So, boys, S2 Cognition delivers a revolutionary approach to helping athletes understand how in-game decisions impact their performance from the youth level to the professional level. So again, we really appreciate our partnership with S2 Cognition. Check these guys out. It's really awesome stuff going on over there. So boys, let us jump right into the MLB draft. That's why we've got our esteemed director of credibility on here today. Seif, boys, let's start with this. I think there's a little bit of an area of angst in baseball right now that the draft is so late. And so if I'm not mistaken, it's going to start day one is July 17th. And let me just kind of frame up the problem. The problem is you're going to have to fix me here if I get over my skis, which is likely. But the problem in the scouting community is that you're now scouting 23s and 22s simultaneously. Like the main events for 23s, 2023 draft eligible prospects is happening right now. And we haven't even executed our 2022 draft yet. So that's a problem for the scouting community. For the college baseball community, it's really problematic because when you think about roster movement, the number one catalyst for roster movement is the MLB draft. Who's going to be in college baseball next year and who's not? That affects, collegiate eligibility. It affects depth charts. And so think about it. So draft July 17th. Signing deadline's August 1st. School starts August 15th. So all these decisions just get slammed into this tiny little window. All for what purpose? So we can have the draft be part of All-Star Weekend and maybe have slightly better TV ratings. So I was a little bit, I definitely steered the jury there. I didn't mean to do that, but I did it. Open the floor. What are your guys' thoughts on this date and good, bad, and different? What do we need to do here?
I think you just weigh the pros and the cons. I think, like you said, it's a while after roster management. But on the good side, at least the guys aren't coming out of the on-deck circle at the Super Regional. You know what I mean? Or they hear that they are just drafted when they're, walk up to the plate or, ready to throw the next pitch. So, I mean, I do like that. I don't like it late. I wouldn't like it late as a college coach because what you mentioned, but also as a scout, I don't think the scouts like it this late either because it's basically 3-4 weeks of they're out there doing stuff. But like you said, with 2023s and all these 22s are popping up. I know with the Major League Baseball Draft League that I'm part of, there's so many guys throwing hard. And there's like 47 guys throwing 95 plus in that league. It's not like they're all new names, but there are enough new names where if you're an area guy and that guy's in your area, you're doing a little like, hey, you know, what did I miss? You know, because a lot of guys go off and throw harder in the summer. So it just creates a whole lot. It's good to get a longer look at these guys. You know, a lot of guys you didn't get a chance to look at in the spring because you never got there, especially if you're scouting a northern area. But yeah, I think it is a little too late, but there's good and bad on both sides. So I'm ready for it. Let's go. So I can't wait till Sunday.
Me either. Fitzy and Kara, what are your thoughts on this?
Go ahead, Kennel.
Yeah, I mean, my take is this. So as college baseball people, as people who talk to college baseball coaches, for years we've complained and complained and complained about the draft timeline. Well, it's in the middle of the season. It's interfering with the postseason. It's interfering with – it's taking the limelight off of this and that. And now MLB's put it during a week that does not affect college baseball viewership at all. They got pretty decent ratings for it last year. They kind of meshed in with the All-Star weekend. So on one hand, I'm kind of like, hey, I get it. Like, it stinks. You have to renew scholarships on July 1. You don't exactly know who's showing up at campus. But on the other, it's like we literally harped on Major League Baseball for a decade about, oh, we don't want this overshadowing, you know, our season and things like that. And now that they've done that, now they have moved it. Not to say they're doing it for college baseball, but now that they have moved it, now we have a problem with that. And so it's just kind of like, you know, kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing if you're MLB. And I just think for me, the optimal time for me, if I'm looking at viewership interference with college baseball season, I'm looking at like the middle of the week before Omaha, right before the College World Series, because then what you can do is you can have the draft right before the College World Series. And guess what? ESPN becomes a showcase for, hey, here was the St. Louis, you know, if you're the St. Louis Cardinals fan, you can go see Peyton Graham, first rounder Peyton Graham play for Oklahoma. So you're not really interfering with the first two rounds of the postseason. And oh, by the way, you give, you know, ESPN this treasure trove of information to kind of run with and, you know, publicize college baseball with. So that, for me, that's like my sweet spot for the draft.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's fair. And we've always thought the solution from a college standpoint was easy. Move it back one day. You know, the problem that we always had was they put it on Monday of Super Regionals. And it's like, that sucks. But if you put it on Tuesday of Super Regionals, like, you're fine. You know, it's right. Like such an easy fix. But all that said, I agree with Kendall. Like, we've been complaining about this forever. And like, I'm not going to complain now that they've addressed my single biggest issue, which was the overlap with when guys are on the field. Now, would it be better if it were a little earlier, even like the 4th of July range? Maybe like, I don't know, if you could have, I mean, you're not going to move the All-Star game up, I guess. Like, the All-Star game is when it is. And so I guess it doesn't make sense to move the draft up into early July and have it be a standalone event. If you're going to move it up, you probably go back to June. But I mean, I agree. Like, it's harder on all the people who actually work in baseball, right? The people, the scouts and the college coaches, the organizations, it's trickier. Is there any way that you could change the July 1st deadline as far as, you know, renewing scholarships? Like, if you push that back, would that help anything? Or even that's even a possible thing?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to a couple of college coaches about this last week, and they were saying even if you had the scholarship renewal deadline for baseball, like the day after, you know, the day after you have 3 days. So the day after the second day, on the third day, is make the renewal on the third day. Cause they were like, at that point, you pretty much know like who's coming to campus and who's not. So if they would just move it to that would solve pretty much solve every issue when it comes to for the college baseball coach. They probably run into is like they've done with everything with college baseball is they've lumped college baseball on these renewal deadlines with hockey, with, you know, women's softball and these different sports. What they need to do is with baseball is go, you know what? Baseball is a different animal, and we're going to make baseball's renewal deadline a little different than let's say softball or another sport. The counter argument to that, Aaron, would be the parent of the student athlete's going to go, well, heck, like, I'm not going to know till July 16th if there's going to be enough money for little Johnny to go to Baton Rouge. Like, he may have to go to Louisiana Lafayette or somewhere like that because LSU just doesn't have enough money, and we have what, 3 weeks notice before school starts or something like that. So there's counter arguments, but I think that's the best case scenario for me. If MLB sticks where it is to have baseball kind of be taken out of that and put the deadline for renewing scholarships after day two.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing is like, you know, I get it, like the convenience for those of us that work in the game of baseball. But, you know, we're the adults and college baseball coaches deal with inconvenience all the time. It's these families are stuck in gridlock. You know, it's like the draft happens and then 4 weeks later, I got to decide whether I'm moving my kid into a dorm or I'm not moving them into a dorm. Yeah. And I got to decide, like, is this school going to cost me $50,000 or is it going to cost me $20,000? Or, you know, like these are major life decisions that are. And again, if they moved it up 2 weeks, you only get 2 more weeks. But I would assume, I'm not a parent who's done this, but I would assume every day would be awesome. Yeah. Right? Like every day, not rushed.
No, it's funny you mentioned that, Runes, and you probably have countless examples of this, but I was actually Googling the guy's name to remember his exact name. But I remember when Zach Lee, who was a two-sport signee with LSU, when he was drafted by the Dodgers, everybody, like, he literally had up until the signing deadline, which was at that time, I want to say it was right when school started. You know, if you showed up to class, you couldn't sign. Well, Zach Lee was literally like in line at a student orientation in Baton Rouge, stepped out of line, went and signed his contract somewhere. They like faxed it to him and he went and signed. And, you know, Kevin Gausman, I still remember Kevin Gausman. I remember texting with LSU coaches back then, like, hey, did he show up? And they were literally like checking in with Gausman on his drive to Baton Rouge to make sure he was actually showing up. So let's not forget, like, our situation could be a lot worse. It could be like it was back then.
So if you remember those days as a college coach, you had to walk kids to their first class because the rule was once they sat down in that first class, that was the deadline. Oh, my gosh. You're right, Kendall. That was
Paul Maneri said that literally when Zach Lee stepped on the line that they were like, damn, like they got him. So.
Yeah, that's my. I'll never forget 2003 after the 2002 draft, Mike Esposito was going to, you know, he was like an eighth round pick of the Rockies and they didn't sign a high pick. So they had all this money left over for Espo. He got $750,000. We were thrilled because he had Tommy John and he had been a fifth round pick out of high school. So you felt great for him, but the evil, you know, like the evil, the devil on your shoulder is like, hey man, like if you were just to cut that landline, maybe the Rockies can't reach Espo. I swear I didn't think that, but maybe I did.
Michael Patrick Rooney would never do such a thing. That's right.
Man, we could have really used him in that Fullerton Super Regional, just saying. So all that said, good times. We've matured since then. Saif, so let me steer us in a different direction. Let's talk about, before we get into individual players, and you can mention individual players as part of this, what is a theme that jumps out to you, Saif, from this draft? Like, hey, there's high school kids with famous last names. There's a lot of college players that feel safe, but not tons of upside or whatever it is. I don't want to steer the jury again, but is there one theme in this draft that's really striking to you?
I think you already steered it. Yeah. I mean, there are famous prospects at the top of the high school ranks. I think the theme, like the scouting theme, it's a down year for college, like prospects with all the injuries. I mean, to the left-handers, right-handers. I mean, so I guess the theme is all the injuries that have just absolutely depleted the pitching crop, the college pitching crop in particular. And then I guess on the positive, the theme is there's a ton of really good college outfielders. I mean, we put out those lists earlier this week, outfielders, infielders, catchers. Today was right-hand pitchers, left-handed pitchers. But like the top, we had to go 30 deep for the outfielders. There's so many good ones. And then the other list towards the end, you're kind of getting like, okay, this there's like five options for the 10th guy. Well, the 30 outfielders was strong from start to finish. So that was a fun list to put together. So I guess the themes are the amount of injuries. It's not the deepest, most talented college draft in the last 10 years. And then a load of good options if you're looking for a college outfielder, left-handed bat, right-handed bat, whatever you want, it's there for you.
And that feels a little unusual to me, Saif. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like traditionally college outfield is not necessarily a treasure trove. I mean, typically you see more top of the draft guys who are shortstops or catchers. But like, if you look at the track record for college outfielders in the draft, it's a little spottier, you know. I mean, a lot of those guys. But you're right. This is an exciting group. Like, if I'm looking at my favorite guys in this draft. I mean, for me personally, like Gavin Cross is the top of the list. You know, I just think it's a can't miss bat, you know, and there's several guys like that that are just tooled up and have serious upside in that outfield group. And even once you get down into, like you said, the 20s here and on this list, I mean, you've got guys that have really performed at a high level. You've got All-American performers, guys like, you know, Bubba Allen, who's an older guy. Like, there's some neat older players too in this group of outfielders that have done it. You know, you got some kind of wild card guys like Chris Newell, who's got tools, or, I mean, you know, Carlos Contreras from Sam Houston State is, I know, a player that Kendall really likes who made this list. So yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a surprisingly strong position this year.
KR, how about you? What jumps out at you as far as just overall this draft?
Yeah, I'm kind of with those guys, especially Cy, talking about all the pitching injuries. You know, I look at, you know, the guys that played really well down the stretch, specifically the two kids from Oklahoma and Cade Horton and Peyton Graham. I'm very intrigued to see where Cade Horton ends up going. You know, this is a guy that, you know, has a lot of leverage. Like, he can go back to school and won't skip a beat and probably make more money. But, I mean, I kind of feel like a guy like that is going to get a lot of money. It's probably going to get more than enough to sign. And so for me, just to kind of see where, you know, guys like him go, you know, Reggie Crawford, you know, we were just talking about him off the air. I mean, Reggie Crawford, you know, commits to Tennessee out of the transfer portal. He's got, you know, 3 more years of eligibility left. You know, does he get enough money to sign, or does he go back to college? So to me, some of those kind of lower class draft eligible guys are kind of really intriguing for me.
Yeah, I would tell you guys, it's so – I think in a normal draft, there's – like, I see all these mock drafts, right? And there's a lot of tough talk about all these sexy high school hitters at the top of the draft. And, you know, it feels like with every mock, the high school hitters just keep jumping up. It's like 5 straight high school hitters. But then my perception is when it's, you know what, cutting time, and the draft actually happens, these college hitters – with way more data and security, just start, like, if you picture a horse race, they just start coming from the back of the pack, right? And the next thing you know, the high school hitters that with all the risks, they start dropping. And then so you end up with this mix. The difference this year, which I think is so fascinating, and of course I'm oversimplifying, is that the college class just isn't that sexy. You know, like, even the college hitters, I feel like, normally have more upside than they do this year. And then the high school hitters with all the risk have these famous last names, Holiday, Collier, Jones, that would make you feel safer if I was a scouting director. Now, again, I've never worn that hat, sat in that chair, but I think that's a fascinating push and pull right there that, you know, like, where does it end up? Where does this race finish? Do the high school hitters with the famous last names, do they maintain their place? Because of their excel, hey, even Elijah Green, right? Like, his dad was an NFL guy. So I don't know. I'm going to be very curious about that.
Yeah. The other thing too that's interesting to me, Runes, is if you look at the number of guys who are expected to go high who actually didn't even play college baseball this past year. You know, Connor Prelip, you know, threw that bullpen at the SEC tournament. You know, you look at, we just talked about Reggie Crawford. He got hurt literally last year. You look at Peyton Paulette. And you look at Landon Sims. You know, Landon Sims pitched, 2 weeks and then was out. So where are those 4 guys go? And also for me, Ivan Melendez, you know, Syfe has him, you know, picked in the second round right now. I mean, could he be a guy that finds his way to the back end of the first round? I mean, you know, Max Wagner was ACC Player of the Year. You know, is he a guy that could find his way perhaps at the back end of the first round? Just, you know, 2 guys that had ultimate production in college baseball this year.
Yo, hey, let me do this, boys. Let's steer it this way. Stife, I'm going to steal your idea, and I'm going to shape it a little bit. So here's what I want you guys to do. We're going to go around the horn, and I want you to pick a tool, a pitch, a part of a player that is the loudest to you. So the way, Stife, you framed it was the top tool, but so you can have any player, and, you know, it could be, you know, I don't know, Cade Horton's slider, Cooper Jerpy's fastball, could be whatever. So give me the loudest singular tool, and let's stick to college, in the college class this year. Syfe, you get to go first, since you're the credible one.
Yeah. Well, I want to go with Melendez's power, but I'm actually going to go with Nolan McLean's arm strength from third base.
Or if you put
him on the hill, which is where I think he'll eventually be, because, I mean, you just can't survive. He literally had a 37% strikeout rate this year for Oklahoma State, which you can't survive that. I mean, that's anyway. But so I'm going to go with Nolan McClain's arm strength from third base. It's 70, maybe even a 75 grade arm.
Hey, Saif, have you seen any metrics or what the data people think of? Because McClain has kind of been like a, you know, high school travel ball pitcher, like just, hey, I'm playing third. Somebody flips me the ball. I show up, throw 97, rip off some sliders and go back to third base. Like what are the metrics say about those pitches? Do we know?
I don't know what the metrics say. I really don't. He's not a big name on many boards. And if he is, it's more of a position player. Because, again, he has like 70, 75 raw power, too. I mean, he's like Pete Incaviglia as far as the profile. I mean, I know what I saw. And I saw 97. And I saw 65, 70 grade slider. So it's pretty good. But if we're just going tools, he's on the dirt. I mean, his arm at third base is kind of like Tanner's behind the plate for Mississippi State. Yeah.
And isn't it 97 with like turbo sync or something too? Like I have never seen him pitch, but except for on TV, but I remember Rob Walton saying in the fall that it's got like crazy life on it.
Yeah. No, we have him in the third round as a pitcher, which he's in that area too. Like you mentioned before, Cade Horton, you know, will he sign? Will he not sign? Could he get more money next year? I think McClain's kind of in an area kind of third round, like, hey, he can go back to school and maybe try to improve as a hitter, but he'll probably, if they switch his role somehow, I'm not going to say they're going to do what Mississippi State did with Landon Sims and make him a starter, but there might be a way for McClain to go back to school just as a sophomore eligible guy this year to make more money, at least second round next year, for example. So I throw him out there. He might not even be signable, but I don't know what the situation is, but luckily I don't have to worry about signabilities anymore. I can just rank the players based on their talent. Much easier.
Yes. Saif, do you think, is there any chance that somebody sends McClain out as a hitter and just, hey, let him fail and then he can go on the mound? Or you think if he's going out, he's going out as an arm?
I would draft him as his arm. I mean, I've seen enough on the bat. I mean, it's big power, but the swing is so long. I'm not sure about the pitch ID. I mean, he just swings through anything middle in over 92. I mean, it's sorry to speak down on such a talented guy, but I mean, that's what I saw 30%, 37% of the time. That speaks volumes. But yeah, I would just draft him as an arm and send him as an arm out as an arm.
So if I would say this about McClain, like the swing and miss got so bad. I watched a ton of him in the postseason because you can imagine we were on the Stillwater Regional in squeeze play like nonstop. And the swing and miss was so out of control. It was like this swing that there was like one pitch in one location at one velocity that he could run into. And like, God bless the kid, like his competitive, like if that was me, I would have absolutely quit baseball that weekend. Right. Like, I would have melted. And then he had that episode on the mound and he was a huge part of Oklahoma State still almost winning that regional. Like his, like, I don't know the kid, never met him, but his makeup's got to be an 80 because for him to endure all of that, a million strikeouts and still compete the way he did. He seems like a fantastic competitor given all that stuff. So, KR, you go next. What's a tool that jumps out?
I'm going to stick in the state of Oklahoma and in the Big 12 conference. I'm going to go with David Sandlin's slider. I saw Sandlin earlier this year at the Shriners College Classic, and, you know, he was good in his start. But, I just think back to the way that he threw against Texas A&M. And, you know, there are very few pitchers in college baseball that go against that lineup, and you're just sitting there going, man, A&M doesn't have a chance. And on that day in Omaha, David Sandlin's slider was, like, as plus as you can get. A&M had no shot to hit it. And for me, that outing just really stood out. His slider was electric. I loved his poise. He was very much dialed in, had a kind of a calm but businesslike demeanor. And he's one of those guys that even though, you know, we have him projected to be in a third round, like, man, third round seems like that's a really good kind of a steal for a team if his slider continues to be at that level. That slider is special.
He's at Wasso High School, which is a really good program in Oklahoma, and he pitched 1 year of varsity baseball. Like, it's, you know, in an era where we're signing 2026s, like, it's, you know, like we're eating chiclets. The it's just crazy that this kid, you know, he would be not recruited, right? Like, he was not recruited, had to go to junior college. And now he could be a third round pick. It's crazy.
Yeah. And he had what, 13 punch outs in that game against A&M? Something like that. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. And the fastball's got juice too. I mean, it's mid-90s fastball. So yeah, I agree with you. It's an intriguing upside pick there. I like that.
Fitzy, your turn.
So Kendall mentioned a few guys who didn't pitch this spring because of injury. Guys, Carson Wisenhunt is such a fascinating case of this draft. For me, his changeup, sci-fi saw that. Yep. That's right. His changeup is, for me, the single most dominant pitch in this draft class. It is absurd. I mean, it's the best changeup I've seen in years. You know, he throws it with such conviction, and he can locate it really well. Throw for a strike or a chase, it has tumble, arm speed, and fade, deception, and it just, it's vicious. I mean, I never forget one of the times I saw him last year. I mean, he's just going to that pitch over and over again, and he got like 30 swing and miss or some crazy thing with that pitch alone. I mean, it was an absurd amount of swing and miss with that pitch. And then, of course, he can drop in a, you know, I've seen the breaking ball really good at times too. Like, it's a legit power curve, like 80, 82 or something, with teeth, you know, and it's, you know, up to 94, 95. I mean, like, for me, the fastball feels like it maybe played a little bit true. I feel like the secondary stuff is better, but boy, that changeup is special. And I think that makes the fastball better.
Hey, Runes, can, since they're on the pitching team, can I throw out a pitch and a pitcher?
Please.
I'm going to go Blake Burkhalter's cutter. I think Fitty and Raj will agree with him there. They saw it time and time again at the World Series. But I was sitting there watching. I stayed home for the Super Regional, and I was watching Oregon State. I was watching Auburn at Oregon State, and they brought in Burkhalter. Hadn't really heard much about him, you know, even though he was the Auburn's closer. And I'm like, man, he's got a plus changeup. So made my notes, Super Regional, Burkhalter plus changeup up to 95 with his fastball. Had no notes on the cutter. And then I'm watching the World Series on TV and see this 90-93 cutter. I'm like, what is that? So, I mean, the guy, he's got a starter delivery, starter arm action. I know he's, sorry, Fady, just 6 foot, but he's not the biggest guy. But his arm works, his delivery's clean. He's got 3 pitches for strikes. He pounds the zone. I'm like, this is a guy. And so he went from unranked, we didn't have him ranked in the top 50 at the midseason, to I believe we have him in the third round. And I think he could be one of the quickest outside of Hajerpe to the big leagues of anybody. And so Blake Burkhalter, cutter.
By the way, Saif, your tool for pronunciating last names, the fact that you just threw a Hajerpe at us is
ever.
Just more confirmation of why you should go 1-1.
Right. I was wondering if I heard that right, that you said Hajerpe. Yes.
Silent H. Just Jerpy.
Silent H.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you sure? I've heard both.
Oh yeah. No,
in scouting circles, it's a Jerpy, but in pronunciation guides, it's not.
Nothing will ever be as bad as O'Pete's, but her Jerpy is pretty bad. Yeah.
O'Pete's like bad.
Top 2 pitchers in college baseball.
Yeah. It sounds like sounds like the Swedish chef over here. Hajerpe.
Everybody needs the last name of Rogers, Fit, or Rooney. I can go
That's
with that.
Right. That's
Smith is good too. So
yes, Saif, but your point is well taken. Can you imagine preparing hitters to face Burkhalter? Hey boys, you got to be ready to address 84 miles an hour all the way up to 97. By the way, the 97 is going to just jump. The 92 is going to go sideways, and the 84 is just going to vanish on you. I mean, like, hey, good luck, boys. I don't know what to tell you. Like, and by the way, you're only going to see him once today. Like, you don't get 2 cracks at him.
Yeah, what's interesting? Go ahead, Saif.
I just say you're going to get the mini scouting report from the guy who just batted while you're walking to the plate as the on deck batter. He's going to give you the 2 sentences, and you're going to be like, oh, okay, and go up there and see it for yourself.
Yep. Go ahead, KR. Finish your thought, and I'll do mine.
No, I was just going to say on Auburn, like Trace Bright's really interesting to me as well. I mean, his fastball in Omaha. I was looking at my notes actually when he was throwing in Omaha. And when I saw him opening weekend at Globe Life, I mean, it was like 92, 94. I mean, he was 95, 98 for like six innings with that fastball in Omaha. So I'm kind of curious to see what he can do at the next level with that fastball.
Yeah, he's really talented. So boys, here, and then we'll kind of get, well, let's keep staying with those kind of first roundish guys. So, you know, like Brooks Lee's bat to me, I love just everything about it, his family, his, how confident he is, the, you know, his production. You know, speaking of Cooper Jerpy's fastball, to me is just this alien pitch that, you know, is there. There's, I just never forget that super regional against, or the regional against Vandy, where they brought Jerpy into close, and it was just basically like, okay, everyone just go home, I got it, and just tore up the top of the Vandy order, went right through Bradfield, Keegan, all those guys with basically a pitch, just like, here's my fastball, thanks for coming out. But you know who I'm going to go with, boys? It's not even a tool. I'm going to go with Caden Wallace's it factor. I am just so smitten with the way that kid competes. And like he reminds me of Steph Curry, where, you know, like the tools are hard to parse out, but he's just the best player on the field. The game looks slow. I don't know. I'm all in on Caden Wallace. Yep. It's weird. Like, Seif, he doesn't have great tools for a first rounder, and it's not like he won the Golden Spikes or anything. I don't know. He's a very interesting, I feel like he's a unanimous top 35 pick, but I don't know. What is his best tool? Is it his bat? It's not like he hit 400 in college or anything.
How is his arm strength? I mean, it's 60 grade arm, but it plays above because he's so accurate. He gets really good backspin on it. Super good carry. He's right always to the target. So it's 60 arm strength, but it plays better than that. But he doesn't really have a bad tool either. I mean, because he runs fine. He's got power. He's got hit ability. I mean, he's a solid defender. So yeah, he doesn't really have there's no bad tool with him. I'm with you. I've always enjoyed watching him play.
It's one of my favorite swings in the draft. And I know that maybe that didn't necessarily translate to, like, you know, player of the year numbers, but he had a good year. He's had two good years. And I just think there's a lot more to come. I just love the swing.
Isn't it he's like this veteran of college baseball. He played 2 years. You know, it's like, really good player. Hey, let's keep going, boys. What, in that kind of top 40 pickish round, who's a player of interest for you? KR, I'll start with you this time. Mm-hmm. Who's another player that really jumps off the page for any reason?
Yeah. You know, I'm going to go with Dalton Rushing and Silas Ardoin at Texas. You know, Rushing to me was really impressive at the College Station Super Regional. I thought he commanded the plate really well. I loved his leadership. He showed huge power throughout the weekend. I just thought he really stood out for me. Ardoin is the other one. You know, offensively, he kind of took a step forward this year. But, you know, for the last couple of years, he's been an elite defender. He has been one of the big reasons why guys like Pete Hansen and whatnot have had success. He's been an excellent receiver. He's had a strong arm. And, you know, he's a guy that now will probably be a top two round pick. So just to see his development over the last couple of years has been pretty special because he's a really, really nice catcher.
Gotta love it. Fitzy, who are you thinking about?
Well, I think it's interesting that we've got three Hokies in our top 50. Yeah. One of them, of course, being Gavin Cross. I already told you is my favorite player in this draft. Just feels like I've made the comp before. It's like Brian Urlacher playing center field. It's just like he's so physical and just the way he moves. He's such a load. Like, I love, if you look at our top 50 outfielders list or whatever it is, top 30, there's a photo of him in the lead that Shotgun Spratlings took. It's just a photo of him rounding third base. And he's just like, he just looks like a freight train, man. Like I love the guy's physicality. You know, and I think he's got the right makeup too. He's really even keeled, but we've also got Cade Hunter, you know, another catcher back there, son of a scout, the Mariners. It's a guy that Seif has talked about this year. He's really improved his stock, but the one that I wanted to highlight here is Tanner Schoble. One of my favorite players in the country. I remember having a debate with a scout at the ACC tournament this year, like, all right, so, you know, why does everyone see Zach Neto as a consensus, like, mid first rounder and Schoble much lower? Like, we've got him in the second round, you know, mid second round. But I mean, like, yeah, okay, Neto's what, 2 inches taller. Okay. But besides that, I mean, like, if you grade out their tools and you look at their performance, and you know, Neto had an All-America year, so did Schobel. I mean, they both were All-America performers. Schobel did it in the ACC, but I mean, like, he's only 5'10", but he's super twitchy. I think he's a legit shortstop. I think it's a plus arm that really plays. I think there's enough range there and athleticism. I really like him at that position. Saif, I don't know how you feel about that, where he sticks long-term, but and even though he's short, I mean, his hands are so fast. He hit, 18, 20 home runs or something this year. He had a big year, showed some power. He controls the zone. He runs fine. He's not like a burner, but he runs fine. And to me, if you're going to draft Matt McClain in the first round twice as an industry, why isn't Schobel regarded as a first rounder? Like, his tools to me are just as good as McClain's or better. In some cases, I think he's a better defender than McClain. I like the way he moves better. I think his actions are better. They're very similar physically. I mean, I don't get why he's not regarded higher. And I think there are some scouts who do regard him higher. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets popped before maybe what a lot of people think he will be.
Is that athleticism, Saif? What is it? What is the knock on Schobel?
I don't think there's a knock. I mean, we were talking about, Fitty and I were talking about this at midseason, where we're kind of looking at each other. Why is Schobel considered like a fifth, sixth round type guy? I mean, look at his tools. Yeah, he's 5'10", but we brought the name McClain, and I always forget the name, but who's the guy in North Carolina was a first rounder like in 2000? And
Levi
Mormith.
I mean, Schobel's tools are way better than Mormon's tools. And so, not that we pushed him up the industry board, but I mean, Schobel kept pushing himself up, and now we have him in the second round, and I think that's a good spot for him. But I agree with everything Fitty said. I thought Fitty was going to go with the Neto Harrington from Campbell combo over the trifecta here from Virginia Tech. But yeah, Fitty nailed Schobel. I mean, he's kind of a, I'm not sure in the second round if he's any more undervalued any longer, but yeah, he's risen up from fifth, sixth round to fourth to third, and I think people are finally seeing his true value.
And I'll follow up on that, because you hit on Neto and Harrington, and just because I was making that Neto comparison, I don't want to discount Neto. Like, for me, he is a slam dunk first rounder. I mean, I think he's the real deal. You know, it's just, again, he's a little more physical than Schobel, but he really runs. He's actually a better runner than Schobel. Obviously, he's got real arm strength at short. Once again, I think he can play that position. I think he can stick at shortstop. I love the way he controls the zone. I mean, what was it? Did he have twice as many walks as strikeouts this year? Something like that. He stole a bunch of bases. He hit over 400. He hit for power. He had a bunch of doubles and triple. I mean, like, he does everything. He's a, you know, you can stick him on the mound, you know, to close out a college game. He's not going to do that in pro ball, but like, he's just a winning baseball player. And yeah, you can talk about the, you know, slightly unorthodox way he does it with that giant leg lift. But I mean, he manages to get his hands on time and finds barrels. He's a hitting machine. So all in, certainly on Zach Neto, and you know, Harrington, his teammate at Campbell, is one of my favorite arms here, just because it's a polished strike thrower with four pitches, you know, great strikeout walk rate, great performer. So like, the analytics teams are going to like him, but also I think there's more in the tank. He's still, you know, he's 6'4" and kind of lean. I feel like as he matured physically, I mean, he'll show you mid-90s, but like, if you see him in a short stint, you'll see more than that. But I mean, you know, he's got feel to spin the curveball and the slider, and he's got a real changeup. Like, it's four pitches for me that all grade out as, you know, average to plus, you know, maybe 55 or better for all those when it's all said and done. So I think, you know, if you get him in the middle of second round, I think you got something there.
Yeah, I think to answer your question more directly, Runes, is I think McClain is just more famous, you know, Team USA, the USA CNT, and Schobel hasn't had that on his resume. It's kind of like, you know, you're going to hire the, even though the guys are just smart, you're going to hire the guy from Harvard or the guy from a lesser known university, you know?
Phoenix College.
Yeah, there you go. And even though
Parkland Cobra,
Phoenix College guy might be better than Harvard guy, you know what I mean? It's just, I think it's just all resume and reputation, and Schobel just didn't get the opportunity to compete for any of the USA national squads. So
I think McClain looks twitchier too, Saif, and maybe that's because he's famous, but like, I think McClain's like body, like, screams athlete more. Schobel's body is not, like, he's just not as ripped up as McClain was, or at least that my impression of it. But I think, mm-hmm, you guys are making a good point that like the like when you watch Schoble play enough, it's hard not to walk away thinking he just checked every box that I could, just because he doesn't, you know, look like X. If he plays like it, like, isn't that what matters?
Mm-hmm. And has the tools like it, and he does. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So my guy, I'm going to ask you guys some questions. If you already know the answer, please don't cheat. So do you guys know how many college innings Reggie Crawford has thrown?
Six.
I was going to say, I'm going to say 15.
KR?
18.
Seven. 7.2. We have him ranked 18 right now. Here's the other question. Do you guys know how big he is?
6'4", 220.
Fitzy?
230.
Yeah, something like that. I'll go with Syph.
Yeah. 6'4", 235. Okay, final question. Do you know what he hit his freshman year? What his batting average was?
365.
I know he had like 12, 13 home runs. I don't know the batting average.
That was sophomore year.
I'm going to say 285.
So he hit 365 his freshman year. And then his sophomore year, he hit 295 with 13 home runs and 62 RBIs. So again, like, Reggie Crawford is fascinating to me because, you know, can you imagine drafting him and, like, what are you doing with him? Is he going to go hit? Is he just going to throw? Is he a reliever? Is he a starter? I don't know. Like, do you guys feel like we know more about him as an arm than I perceive, than the seven innings may tell you? Or I don't know. He seems like an absolute roll of the dice. There's so many positives, but it would seem unsettling to me that he's your first round pick, given that it's all, I don't know. But then there's so much to get excited about. Like, he's checked, you know, he's 6'4", 235, athlete, high school swimmer at an elite level. You know, he's great. He never failed as a hitter. He never really failed as a pitcher. I don't know. Syph, I'm going to ask you, because you're the former scout. What, like, that's a weird first round pick, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be, but not in this year's class. Like we said, all the injuries and everything else. Yeah. But I saw, I think, two of the six innings he threw for the collegiate national team last summer, and I was just drooling the entire time. Like you said, 6'4", 235, and it's not like he's muscling it up there. It's loose. It's easy. He can spin it. He was throwing strikes. It's high spin. You know, it's just not a – I know, you know, clubs now, they want that high spin heat, you know, just because you can do more stuff with it. But he's got it all. But for me, he's just going right to the mound. I just forget the bat, just go right to the mound. He's a left-handed starter with that touches 100, and he has a plus breaking ball that lands for strikes.
Kendall and Fitzy, a percentage chance that he ends up at Tennessee next year, which is where he is elected to transfer portal to?
30% chance that he gets to Tennessee.
Fitzy?
I think that's about right. I think there's a real chance, but it just kind of depends how much he values himself and how much he's willing to take as maybe a compromise. If a team comes up and says, hey, listen, we're going to cut a deal here. We'll take you, you know, 15 overall, but you can have $2.5 million. Is he going to walk away from $2.5 million when he's only pitched seven innings in his career? I mean, maybe, you know, he could bet on himself and try to be a top five overall pick next year and make $6 million, but that's a big bet.
Yeah, I love it.
I was gonna bring up the Syph. Like, Syph, from what you saw just from his mechanics and his actions, do you think he can be a starter at the pro level? Because I know Josh McDonald, they were hoping to move him to starting rotation this year, and so we kind of lost out on seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, athleticism wise, arm action, delivery, two pitches for strikes. Yeah, he's definitely a starter for me. I didn't see a changeup, but again, I just saw two innings. Man, I think we're in Bristol, Tennessee, or somewhere with the U.S. the collegiate national team's tour through the Appy League last year. But yeah, definite starter.
Love it, boys. Let's do one more, and then we'll wrap it. So on our spreadsheet, fourth round and below is about pick 75. You know, in our ranking, 75 or below. So give me a player you love in that range, you know, fourth round or below, pick 74, rank 74 or later, player you love in that region. Syph, go ahead. You go first.
Oh man, pick it on me first here.
I know who Kendall's going to take.
It's definitely going to be from Oklahoma or Texas.
Yeah.
KR, you love to stay. What is that? What is that called? That little area, Oklahoma versus in Texas.
The bubble.
The Kendall bubble.
The heartland. I don't know. We're the heart. We're the Texas, man. We're the heart of America. Come on, dude.
That's right. America.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Runes. I'm going to have to go with the guy I saw really good at Oklahoma State. So it was earlier in the year, I think maybe week 4, week 5, when Gonzaga went on their United States tour. I think they were on the road for maybe 15, 16 days or whatever. But Tristan Vreeling, did I pronounce the last name correctly?
Vreeling. But it's a pretty good effort.
I knew. Anyway, Tristan Vreeling. I just saw a major league body, a major league athlete, and a major league plus to better slider. And he was just getting swing and missed after swing and miss. And I know he didn't fare as well maybe the last third or quarter of the year. His I don't know if his velocity dropped, but his slider wasn't as tight, breaking as hard. His ERA got inflated. But if we're talking 75th on down, I'm going to have to go with number 76 is Vreeling.
Love that. KR, who are you thinking about here?
Well, I was gonna talk about Sonny. I feel like that's like cheating to
Sonny D.
Sonny, so you know, I'll tell you a guy I absolutely loved this year, and I don't know what he will end up doing as a pro guy, but you know, Tommy Sokka, we've got him at 139 overall, and man, he was just a really, really nice looking player this year. He's always been a premier defender, but this year he became a premier hitter. You know, he hit for a high average. He hit for power, as we saw in the regional and throughout the year. He's got just outstanding makeup. He's, you know, he is an older guy, and that's kind of a knock against him. But, man, he checks a lot of boxes, and I'll be very curious to see what he does at the next level. He was a special player for the Frogs this year.
What are you thinking there, Fitzy?
I'm going to cheat a little bit in two ways. First of all, I'm going to give you four names instead of one.
Oh, come on. That's something I would do.
Secondly, the first name is just inside the top 75, I think. But he is in the fourth round tier. He's in the fourth round tier on our spreadsheet. So I think that's close enough. Guys, Alex McFarland from Miami is so exciting to dream on, because it's just like super loose. It's like 99 without any effort. And, you know, like the track record is mixed. The command needs refinement. He's still so young and raw. I mean, the Virgin Islands kid without a lot of mileage on the arm. The body is just as projectable as it comes, and he already throws 99. You know, I mean, like, this kid's got enormous upside, and he does have field to spin. It, you know, I mean, it's all there. It's all there. It's just a matter of putting it together. If I can get that guy in the fourth round, I mean, you might 10 years down the road be looking at a guy like, how did this guy not go in the top five picks? You know, like, he, one of the few guys I feel like in this part of the draft where like you could get elite return for a lesser investment. So that one is exciting to me. And then I like this group of shortstops we have here between Jalen Battles, Josh Kasevich from Oregon, and then of course Ryan Ritter and Jordan Sprinkle. That's actually five names, but like all those guys are clustered fairly close together. I like all those shortstops. I think they all, well, I think Battles, Kasevich, and Ritter are all big league shortstops. I feel like Sprinkle's maybe more of a second baseman. Maybe Kasevich is a second baseman too, but Battles and Ritter can really defend. They're all just really smooth. I can't quit Ryan Ritter. Saif, I know you're with me as far as just the looks that we both got. I think in the Cape last year, just fell in love with the defense. He just does things that normal human beings or even exceptional human beings cannot do.
He's hitting well in the Cape right now too. So it's 2 years of really good hitting in the Cape, sandwiched in the middle with a May year at Kentucky with the bat. So sorry to cut you off there, but he's out there doing well in the Cape right now. So.
And that's one that I'm going to bet that he can figure it out. He has continued to gradually make progress offensively. I know if you talk to Mike Roberts at Kituit, he swears by the kid, by his makeup. He thinks he's going to hit. He has hit for Coach Roberts, and he's hit, you know, he hit decent year for Kentucky. He wasn't terrible this year offensively. I do think there's just some looseness to that frame, and it's like maybe figure out the approach, maybe make some mechanical adjustments. I feel like there's some hand speed. I think he's got a chance to hit some. I'm not saying he's going to be like a, you know, all-star caliber hitter, but boy, I think the defense is going to be special, and he could wind up, if the bat clicks, you might wind up getting an all-star because he can play the hell out of shortstop.
I love that. Yeah, boys, you know who's top of mind for me is Andrew Walters. For whatever reason, I always want to call him Jonathan Walters, which would be in my, that would go in my Logan Sims bucket, even though his name is Landon Sims. But, and I feel like Andrew Walters, it was not great down the stretch. He gave up a bunch of runs to Notre Dame. And then I think he coughed it up in the game against, the game they eventually were eliminated in the regional. Andrew Walters did not pitch well. But all that said, his batting average against this year was 116. It was 62 strikeouts against six walks in 32 innings. So it's almost an 18 K per nine. You know, it's an upper 90s fastball. I don't know that he's got great off speed stuff, but I don't know that we know he doesn't either, because it's just been able to just dominate people with an upper 90s fastball. I think the metrics people are going to really like that fastball, that it's got good properties. And so he's like a fourth round pick right now, who, if he stays healthy, it feels like he's certainly a big leaguer. I don't know. What's the book on that, Sife, taking a reliever in the fourth round? Is that a good thing, or is that you should be reaching for more in the fourth round?
No, I think that's a good spot. I think relievers typically, unless, I mean, like, the birdies were taken in the first round of years past, you know, and there have been some first round relievers, but I think typically clubs start looking to relievers in the third round. So Walters fits that right there in the fourth round.
Love it. All right, yeah. Boys, last question, then we'll wrap. Of the famous high school players with the famous last names, Drew Jones, I'll throw Elijah Green in there, Jackson Holiday, Cam Collier. So Drew Jones, Cam Collier, Jackson Holiday, and Elijah Green. Who ends up with more war in the big leagues? Who has the longer, more productive big league career?
Runes, I have zero idea. I can't believe you're doing
this. I'm asking you to pick a last name, basically.
I mean, Holiday.
I was about to say Holiday just because I've seen some of his clips, and I'm just sitting there like, wow, I really like this dude. Tamar Johnson. Well, he's not a famous name. I was going to say Tamar Johnson, but
yeah, I like him too.
His video on this is impressive.
I got to go with one that wasn't said just to be different. So I'm going to go with Drew Jones.
Yeah, I would pick Drew Jones just because I thought the dad, he seems, it's weird though. If you guys see a spray chart of Drew Jones, he never pulls the ball. Like Eric Longenhagen of Fangraphs sent me his spray chart because he wanted me to ask Chris Burke, like, hey, what is his spray chart? Is literally left center field over here, like nothing at the left field foul pole. And he was like, is that like he can't pull the ball, or is it approach, or
it's Tommy White?
Right? Interesting. So, go ahead, Fizzy.
Real quick, Runes, just to backtrack for 1 second. I was just pulling up my notes on Andrew Walters. I did see the makings of, I mean, I wrote down at least one plus curveball. Like, it's a low 80s power curveball. Like, there's some field to spin there. So he's got a second pitch. I like Andrew Walters. I think that's a neat comment, especially the way the game is gone now. I mean, how many teams are really building their staffs around, you know, old school innings eating starters? Like, everybody's just got a ton of guys who throw hard enough stuff, and you need a lot of those guys. And he's, you know, a guy like that has value. He's the best performer in college baseball at that position this year.
Yeah, he'd make a good opener when he runs.
Yeah, man, you get him in the fourth round, you'd be thrilled. I think you'd be totally jacked up.
Yeah,
I agree. No question. Hey, Sife, what's your draft routine going to be this year? What are you going to be doing on draft day?
Be right here.
Central Illinois.
Yeah, be following along. I'm not sure. We haven't got the full extent of the plan yet for Prep Baseball Report. We usually do something on Draft HQ Live. We haven't nailed it down yet, but I'll be right here watching like everybody else and tweeting and giving my opinion on the picks.
I love it. Very good. Gentlemen, good to see you. We haven't podcasted in 2 weeks, which is probably the break that we need, but I missed you. It's good. It's too long, but it's at the same time, it's good to get our sea legs back underneath of us.
Yeah. Missed you too, Runes. It's great to see your shiny head today.
That's right. We're kind of building back up, right? Like you gotta kind of shut it down. The pitch count gets high at the end of the season.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
That's true. We got lots of summer ball stuff coming up, by the way, after the draft. I've already had a chance to see some Team USA and some Coastal Plain. I know Sife and I are both heading up to the Cape next week. We're both heading up next week. So yeah, we'll have some summer ball stuff to talk about, maybe some breakout players. There's some things to look forward to. It's a post draft. We could probably, you know, get together again and do some post-draft digest perhaps also. So there's lots of stuff to talk about here.
Oh, I love that. Love that idea. Hey, and anybody, if you are watching this on YouTube, if that's even possible, please make sure you hit the subscribe button. Very helpful to the enterprise. Yeah, it was a pleasure. Good to talk to you guys. Enjoy the draft. Everybody have a great summer. We'll catch you next time.